Hello, anyone out there? Okay. Well, a couple of weeks we began a series through the book of Nehemiah, and we saw this guy being rocked by God and breaking his heart. And so he took his broken heart before the Lord, and he headed toward Jerusalem to do a great work. He headed toward a place where he wanted God to use him in a context, and that's what we saw in the first week. What breaks your heart? Nehemiah was saying, what breaks my heart? And he went to this place and context and specific calling that God had used to really break his heart. And then last week we saw the power of everybody, how he got everybody on board, everybody to work on this wall, because this wall won't build itself. You know, Nehemiah's not going to build it on his own. And so we saw the power of everybody and some applications for us as a community. And so they began this great work. And I love that verse. And so they began this great work. And I hope that for many of us tonight, we sit here and we have a sense that God is calling us, revealing to us, showing us a great work. And the thing that made it great, above all else, above just a wall, is the revering of God's name. That is why Nehemiah did it. That is the thing, that's the motive that drove Nehemiah. He said, so that God's name might be honored, so that God's name might be revered. And so he builds a wall. So you can see a picture there of the wall. That's a picture of the old sheep gate. I know when I read sheep gate last week, you thought it was like a Bloemfontein kind of kraal little thingy that they built. That's a massive wall. I mean, that's a 2.7 meter wide wall. And this is the wall that they partook in to build, because this wall represented so much. It was protection for women and for men and for children that were being abused and carried off by governors. It was freedom. Freedom from other rulers and from governors that they could have some kind of independence. But it was a place where God's name would be revered again. It was a place where they could be a light to the nations. And that's what moved Nehemiah. And I hope that for many of you, you sit here and you think, what is my great work that I'm beginning? Maybe you've just become a follower of Christ. And you know, you're like, this is it for me. This is my great work. I want to follow Christ. I want to follow him with all of my heart, with all of my life. I want to know him. Maybe you sit here tonight and you say, I want to be a good dad. I really want to be a great dad to my kids. I want my kids to know that I love them. I want to provide the best for them. I want them to have a space where they feel safe and protected. I want to be a great dad. Or maybe you sit here tonight and you say, I want to be a great spouse. Above all else, I want to be just an awesome wife. That's what I want to be, God. Because the revering of your name is at stake in the way that I conduct myself. Or maybe you're single and you haven't found that guy or that girl, but you want to honor Christ in your singleness. And so you've begun a great work. And I want you to know that it is a great work that you've begun. It is a great wall that you've started building for the revering and honoring of God's name. And then you have this sense that God's hand is on your life in this. And we read Nehemiah, he says, I also told them about the gracious hand of my God that is on me. And I love that, because that's something that I want. At Rosebank, I want God's gracious hand to be on my life. I want God's gracious hand to be on your life. I want this to be a place where people meet with God and are moved by God and are directed by God, where people's lives are changed. And so the gracious hand of God, there's nothing more important, I think, to me or to this local church than to have a sense that God's gracious hand is on us. But then there's always this but. There's always this but, and there was this, Nehemiah had a big but. I mean, not a big but he had a big but. And so we read in the next verse, Nehemiah's but, when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem heard about what he was doing, about this great work that he was doing, they mocked him and ridiculed them. And I sense sometimes in my living for the Lord, in him, in me serving him, I sense this big but. This big opposition. And I don't know if you feel what I feel, but I sense sometimes at every level, it's like you start, you want to see disciples made, you want to see people grow in the Lord, you want to see people know God, you want this marriage to thrive. You want these children to flourish. You want to live faithfully for the Lord as the single person, but there's this big but. There are these undercurrents in any community. There's this gossip in this community, at a staff level, at a leadership level, at a community level, at a personal level, there's always this but. There's always this opposition. And I feel what you feel. And I can't reconcile in my mind, how can God's hand be on this great work? And we sense He's doing a great work, either here or in our own lives. And yet there's this opposition. And some of us are in a difficult space. And we see there's alignment issues. And we see some in the community pulling off in a different direction. And we see, oh, they're never going to do that great work. Oh, you'll be divorced soon. Don't worry, that marriage is not going to last. Oh, don't follow the Lord that way. Like that's hocus pocus. Really come and do what we do. Oh, stop being such a killjoy. Come to the party and do that. Oh, it's not that great work. You're never going to finish it, Nehemiah. And that's what I sense that Nehemiah is going to encourage us tonight through three chapters, chapters 4, 5, and 6. With regards to opposition. And so I want to introduce to you Nehemiah's opponents. Now you'll see the opponents in white are his external opponents, and the opponents in yellow are the internal opponents. And these are the names that you read about in these three chapters. We see Sanballat, who's a governor of Samaria in the north. And Sanballat was like a thorn in Nehemiah's backside. He was the one mocking and ridiculing. He just made Nehemiah's great work difficult. We've got Tobiah. Tobiah married well. He married Jewish wealth. And he had a lot of relational strings, which we'll see. And a constant, like, dripping tap in Nehemiah's heart and mind. We've got Geshem at the bottom. Geshem was the governor of the Arabs. And another formidable leader. Another guy who had lots of say and sway in this work and this project. And on the left, we have the Ashdod people, the Ashdodite people. And Nehemiah was surrounded, as he did this work, with this external opposition. With these people who said, it wouldn't happen, it's not going to happen, we are not going to let you happen. And I'm going to give you a taste of that. And then internally, there were men from Judah, staff employments that grew weary in their work. There were Jews who kind of brought news that this isn't going to happen and was waning down the building project. We had the nobles, the wealthy people who wouldn't work. And two of those nobles, there were two significant fathers, Shechaniah and Meshulam, who Tobiah's wife's dad was Shechaniah. And he made it very difficult in this project. And Tobiah's son married into this Jewish family as well and had a wife whose dad was Meshulam. And so you can see Tobiah's in there. He's in Nehemiah's face. Internally, he's got a say in the community. And these guys are nobles, that they're wealthy people. And generally, wealthy people in that time had a say in terms of what happens and what doesn't. Lastly, we had Nadia, who was a prophetess of the Lord, who made Nehemiah's work difficult. And then Eliashib, who we saw was a high priest, working on the wall. And Eliashib gave Tobiah a storeroom in the temple, which was not on. And Eliashib had a grandson who was married to Sanballat's daughter. And so historically, you can see that Nehemiah has massive, massive, massive opposition. Now, I don't know about you, but if I were Nehemiah, I would say this phrase, I'll check you, I'm out. I mean, I began a great work. It was great, guys. I wanted to see the Lord's name revered, but I'm telling you now, I check you, I'm out. With all of this external opposition, with all this internal difficulty, I'm done. I was happier in Persia. You see, in Persia, I was a bartender, and now I'm a builder. And in Persia, I had a food allowance. I was comfortable. I had the king's ear. I had a nice place to sleep. I didn't have all of the stress and difficulty. I check you, I'm out. But Nehemiah doesn't do that. You see, Nehemiah continues. He doesn't quit that great work. What if Nehemiah had quit? What if he had thrown in the towel on this great wall? What would have happened to the people? What would have happened to God's name? It would have laid in ruins and absolute disgrace. What if you quit? What if you throw in the towel? What if you leave that marriage? What if you give up on that relationship? What if you throw in the towel with you following Christ? What if you look at your son and daughter and say, I'm done, I'm out of here? You are doing a great work. And Nehemiah knew he was doing a great work. And I think he journaled through a question that I'm going to ask you guys to journal through. But firstly, let's dive in more into this opposition. So Nehemiah has this external opposition and this internal opposition. And the first kind of opposition he experiences is this mocking. So we see here, when Sanballat heard we were building the wall, he became angry and he was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria. And so he mocked and he mocked and he mocked. Tobiah joined him the same. Tobiah said things like, the lightest animal around, a fox, is going to walk on this wall and it's going to fall apart. And Sanballat mocked these guys. What are you doing? You can't even, what do you think? You're going to build this in a day? You're wasting your time. Don't live for the Lord. Don't build something like this. Because I think these guys were threatened. They were losing potential power. And so they were. And so these guys were just mocked from the onslaught. And then we see it gets a little bit more serious. As the project progresses, we read, before they know it or see us, we'll be right there among them, and we're going to kill them. And we're going to put an end to this work. And so in some context, living for God, in Nehemiah's context, we are going to kill them. You see, now in the Hebrew, I studied that word. See, the word kill means kill. That's what it means. And if you continue living for the Lord in this way, Nehemiah, if you continue your silly little building project, we, the four enemies surrounding you from every side, from north, from south, from east, from west, we're going to come and we are going to kill you. It's going to be a bloodbath. And you make sure that the people hear about this. And so Jews would come back and feed this information to Nehemiah and say, they're going to ambush us. They're going to come and they're going to kill us. And so Nehemiah comes up with a game plan. They pray together. And the story goes that didn't really happen. But they were laboring in that kind of condition. And then we hear, well, if we can't kill them, let's maybe distract Nehemiah. So Sanballat and Geshem, they send this message to Nehemiah and they say, let's meet. You know, let's meet. Let's meet together in Ono, in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me. And so they say to Nehemiah, let's meet. And they send him another message. Let's meet. And then they send him the third email. Hey, let's meet, Nehemiah. You know, I know you're doing a great work, but let's talk about it. And Nehemiah knew. And then they sent him a fourth message. Let's meet. And Nehemiah wisely doesn't fall for it. But the fifth time, okay, this isn't working. So the fifth time, Sanballat sent his advisor to Nehemiah, the same message, but he sent in his hand an unsealed letter. Now, you would never send an unsealed letter, because an unsealed letter is the way in which you share gossip. Do you know what I mean? It should normally be sealed from one of the governors. And the letter said, Nehemiah wants to become king. And so the messenger would run with this unsealed message, and people would read it and hear it on the way. And so what are they trying to do? They're trying to accuse Nehemiah now. He wants to become your king. And if King Artaxerxes heard about this, that these guys are building a wall, and that Nehemiah wants to become king, and that there's potentially a great revolt, the king of Persia will come and wipe this whole project out and everyone a part of it. So this was a massive, massive threat. And Nehemiah is direct with these people, and he says, I got the king's ear, and the king has commissioned me, and he's given me letters of permission, and that's not true. But at every turn, you see this external opposition. And then you see this internal difficulty. So you see, so we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height. And it's great for many of us in living for Christ and in being a part of a great work. Starting out is easy, but it's when it gets halfway. You know, and when it gets halfway, the people in Judah, they said this, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there's so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. There's so much to do. We can't do this. We're getting tired. We're exhausted. Imagine what Nehemiah felt. Like, this is his staff team. And then we see the nobles. When I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry and pondered them in my heart. So there was something that made Nehemiah very angry. And then I accused the nobles and the officials, and I told them, you're charging your own people interest. And so the nobles thought, these guys have left their lands and their perfume factories and their jewelry stores, and they're here working on the wall, and they've left their farms, and now they can't feed their families. And so there was a huge outcry internally. And the nobles saw this as an opportunity to make a quick buck. So they said, let's get these guys to mortgage their homes. So if they give us their homes, we'll lend them money. And then if they can't pay us back, we're going to keep their homes. And they would charge these guys interest. And there was a massive outcry. And Nehemiah had to deal with this, as they're building the wall, with this big issue that could potentially hinder or harm this massive and this great work. And so Nehemiah is now up against nobles who are on a get-rich scheme in the middle of external opposition and internal opposition. So Nehemiah's really got it going for him. And then they try and go after Nehemiah's reputation. So one day, I went to the house of Shemaiah. Now, Shemaiah is a prophet. And he said, let's meet in the house of God inside the temple. And let us close the temple doors because men are coming to kill you. Now, Nehemiah knew he wasn't a priest. He wasn't a holy dude. He wasn't allowed in the temple. And if he went into the temple, he would have sinned. And out of reverence for God, he didn't go into that temple. And so you can imagine his buddies, like, I know you live for God, but come on, Nehemiah, come into the temple. Just baiting him and encouraging him to sin. Because if he could sin, they could turn around and say, this guy's not worth following. You know, he's not legit. He's just like any, you know, they say, he says he's living for God. He says he attends a worship service. He says he comes on a Sunday. But if we can really damage his reputation and get him to sin, then we've got him. And then finally, Nehemiah has to deal with these loyalties that I spoke about. Also in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah. And replies from Tobiah kept coming to them. And so there was these letters of intimidation. And so if you take stock, Nehemiah comes to Jerusalem with this broken heart and a deep longing for God's name to be revered, for God's name to be noticed, for God to be encountered and met with and known and lived for again. And then he has to put up with all of this. He's got Sanballat and Tobiah and the Ashdodites and Geshem, and he's got the Arabs, and he's got internally, he's got false prophets. He's got people trying to cause him to sin. He's got people trying to intimidate him with letters. He's got people trying to ruin his reputation. And I think Nehemiah goes to his journal and he journals through this key question. See, I think he has a key question to help him, which is a key question that I want us to think about. But before I say that, my dad, growing up, coached a lot of what I know in the game of cricket. You may not know the game of cricket, but he said something to me that was more important than anything I'd ever heard in skilling this game. In the midst of opponents, and there was some strong opposition, in the midst of selections, in the midst of coaches, in the midst of gossip, in the midst of team dynamics, someone trying to get ahead of you in the game, in the midst of everything, I remember him saying this phrase to me, a phrase that helped me every single innings I played. He said, keep your eye on the ball. That was all he said. Keep your eye on the ball. And I thought about that because to keep your eye on the ball is the most important thing that a skilled batsman needs to do. Because when a skilled batsman keeps his eye on the ball, he knows which one to leave and he knows which one to play at. And there's some of those balls that you need to leave. And I would hear my father's voice from the sideline, well left, my son. And then there were those balls that you had to engage with. And I would hear my father from the sideline, well played, my boy. And it just came down to keeping my eye on the ball. And I can imagine Nehemiah, as he journaled, this was his big question. What's taking my eye off the ball? What potentially in the midst of this external opposition, in the midst of this internal opposition, what is taking my eye off the ball? You see, I've got a great work. God has called me to build something that where his name will be revered again. And there are many things that I might do, but there is one thing that I know that I have to do. I have to build this flipping wall. And so every night he would go and he would say, what's taking our eye off the wall? See, I flipped it there. Who's taking my eye off the wall? And out of this principle, I think there were two ways in which he responded. He knew when to leave, and I think he heard from his father, well left, my son. And then there were balls that he had to play at because he knew it was going to hinder this great work. And so we read in the verse, so I called a large meeting together to deal with them. And so he calls a meeting. He sees that the nobles are distracting these people, and this could be something that could derail this great work. And so he engages. He's not in his office. He's not hiding. He's not having strawberry daiquiri somewhere. He's not on a Persian trip. He's not doing speaking engagements in terms of what he needs to do and help other people lead. He calls a meeting and he deals with it and he engages with it. And he says, because if I don't deal with this, this internal problem is going to derail our movement. He's going to derail. So he calls a meeting. The second thing that he does is that he doesn't get distracted. And we read, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. You see, Sanballat sends the first letter, the second letter, the third letter, the fourth letter, and Nehemiah says, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. I've got a name of God to revere. I can't come down right now. And as he responds that way, you hear his father from the boundary saying, well left. And as he engages and calls a meeting, you hear his father from the boundary say, well played. And so he says, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. I can't come to that speaking engagement to teach you on leadership about how I'm doing a great work here. I can't come to that coffee. You know, meetings are overrated, eh? For us. Let's meet. And there are certain things on our agenda. There are certain people on our agenda. There are certain people on our radar. When they say, let's meet, let's talk, let's meet. He has a great subject line. I can't come down right now. I'm doing a great work. And so for us, I wonder if we could consider that question. What's taking my eye off the wall? Because it was the wall that enabled Nehemiah to make a great call, whether to engage or whether to leave. I can't come down right now. I'm doing a great work. It was vision. He knew what God had called him to. He knew what God wanted him to do. And so for us, what's taking our eye off the wall? God's called you to a great marriage. God's called you to be a great parent. God's called you to be a follower of Christ. God's called you to be devoted to him. God's called you to make much of him in your context with your friends, where you live, where you work, where you play. What is it that is discouraging? What opposition? Can you name the opposition? The external opposition and the internal opposition. And so the first principle that I learned as I see this great work, as I see what God is calling us to do here corporately and you individually, I ask that question, what is it that's taking our eye off the wall? And the first thing that I learn is, when something smells funky, we need to engage. We need to call a meeting. And this has been the single biggest principle, I think, in the last 2 years, as I've learned to lead and as I've been leading, that God has really, really challenged and changed my life with. I kind of sit sometimes and I think, you know, it's going to blow over. You know, it's going to sort itself out. You know, let's just see how it plays out. But I see in Nehemiah, this great work demands that I engage. When I see that there's misalignment, when I see that there's gossip, when I see that there's an undercurrent, when I see it in my marriage, when I see it corporately, when I see it amongst my leaders, I engage. I get on the phone. I write emails. I call a meeting. The thing that I want to do is I want to run because I'm scared. I don't want to engage. I think it's going to go away. I want to hide. But I've learned from this, it is so important to engage. I heard from a pastor that I listen to a lot. He gave this image. If there's a gorilla in the cage, open the door and climb inside. You know, we think those words of Jesus are not true. The truth will set you free. And I've found with staff members, when there's something has smelled funky, I've engaged. I've opened the gorilla, the cage, and I've gotten sat inside. I said, we need to talk about this. This is an issue. And I do it privately. And I've done it with my parents. I've done it with my wife. I've done it with my son. I've done it with leaders. There's an issue here, and it's going to derail the great work, the great vision that I want to see God accomplish here and through me and through us. And so I want to ask you, is there someone that you need to engage with? Jesus takes it even more seriously. He says, if you have an issue relationally, if there's a gripe that's unresolved, and you know that person on your mind and on your heart right now, he said, as you've come into the worship service, he said, don't even come to the altar, turn around, go outside, and phone that person. He didn't put it in that language, but that's my interpretation. If there's an issue relationally, there's no point in you attending Sunday church, or you there's no point in you approaching the God of heaven, thinking that he's going to hear us. Jesus says immediately, you can stand up, you can leave, and you can get that relationship right. If something smells funky, engage. And that's where there's freedom, and that's where there's growth. And that's where God works in the midst of our opposition. The second thing that I've learned, I think, is the email reply, I can't come now. Because there are many meetings, there are many people in our minds, internally and externally. There are staff members, there are leaders that want to, let's meet. I'm doing a great work, but let's meet. Let's sort this out. Let's come and do the speaking engagement. Come out there. Come and help me out. Come and do this. Come. Let's meet. And my reply is, I can't come down right now. I'm doing a great work. For you, maybe you sit here and it's that sin that entices you continuously. It's that, maybe it's that pornography. Maybe it's that friend. Maybe it's that weekend binge. Maybe it's that, and it's just saying, let's meet. Let's engage. And I love his reply. I can't come down right now. I'm doing a great work. Can we read that verse together? Just 1, 2, 3. I can't. Oh, sorry. Yeah, let's read it. I'm doing a great work. Okay, let's do that again. One more time. So you want to throw in the towel on that marriage? I'm doing a great work, and I can't come down. You've got that business trip over and over and over and over, but God has given you treasures. He's given you kids to raise. I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. There's that meeting. It doesn't move the ball forward in any way. It was a waste of time. It continually happens. I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. Now, I think that if we did journal individually and as a local church, and we asked that question, what's taking my eye off the wall? And we knew and heard from our Father in heaven from the boundary, you need to play at that one. If it smells funky and it's going to injure the great work and the revering of God's name, you need to engage. You need to go and sit and get comfortable with the gorilla in the cage. Because the truth will lead to freedom. And then there are those people and those meetings and those things where you need to say, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. And as you play and as you leave well, that's the way in which I think Nehemiah dealt with opposition from every angle. And you know what happened? He finished the wall. He finished the great work. He sawed through to the end. And I think if we did that with our walks with God, I think if there were certain things that we engaged with in our character, with the people that we're leading, in our households, in our homes, I think that there'd be growth. And I think if there were things that we left, that we said, I'm doing a great work, I can't come down right now, we would be way better off for it. I think families would flourish. I think marriages would flourish. I think your staff teams would flourish by applying this wisdom. Last week, in closing, I was in a meeting, and there was a guy who invested in my life. Some of you won't know him. His name's Pete Ketterman, and he invited me to a meeting with Campus Outreach, and it was like God really ministered to my soul. I looked at this guy, and he was leading the staff team of 30 people, and I thought, here's a guy who is getting quite old in my eyes, and he's just day in and day out seen his great work as investing in the lives of students. That's been his great work. And he's an engineer. He's left the States. He's had massive external opposition. He's had colleagues and friends ridicule and mock him. He's been in life-threatening situations here. He's had internal difficulties financially. I'm assuming probably in his marriage, like in all of our marriages. Staff-wise, staff I've seen have come and then they've gone. I've seen students part of the ministry and then move on into alumni. And this guy has just kept going for 18 years. And I sat in the meeting last week and I looked at this guy and I was like, thank you, God. And then I thought, what on earth is he doing? Why is he doing it? And I just, he's known what to engage with and he's known what to leave. He hasn't got too churchy, too clicky, too gravitated kind of in the wrong kinds of meetings and things. He's 40 or 50 years old and he's getting into his car and he's coaching, you know, a basketball team. I mean, what does he have in relation to students? And there he is coaching a basketball team because he wants them to know Christ. And then when there's been issues I've seen he's engaged that have hindered that great work. And I took a step back and I thought, this guy, he's influenced my marriage. He's influenced my friends and their marriages and families. He's influenced company after company. He's influenced at least 3 campuses, Tux, Wits, UJ. He's influenced local churches where I go visit those local churches and see people handling God's word who were far from God. And I just looked at this guy and I'm like, he's been unwavering. Because he said, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. I can't go back to America. I can't give up on this great work. And after 18 years, to bump into the fruit of what God has done and the opposition that he has had to persevere through, internal and external, has been so amazing to me. And so what I want us to do is we're going to prepare for communion now. And Nehemiah says one last thing to us. And he says these words. After I looked these things over, he said, don't be afraid. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight. Remember the Lord. You see, we have a great Nehemiah. We have a God in Christ who had the wisdom to know, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down right now. I can't get off that cross right now. And we have a God who, when there were issues, he engaged. He didn't get put on a cross for nothing. And for the joy set before him, which was you and me, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. And God raised him to life. And so hear Nehemiah's words, remember the Lord. Remember your Lord. If you're in a situation where you want to throw in the towel, if you're in a situation where you're discouraged, if you're in a situation where you're like, I think God's hand is on me and in this, but, and maybe your but is big, it's not as big as the Lord's but on the cross. remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight. And so that's what we're going to do now. That's what communion is about. It's a time for you to remember the Lord. That whatever you're going through and whatever place that you're in and whatever opposition you feel to your great wall or to your great work, whatever is taking your eye off the wall, remember the Lord. He's been there. He's gone through it for your sake. And he's encouraging you to carry on. And so in your own time, the worship team is going to come and play a song now. And it's a song that I've been listening to over and over and over and over. I've been listening to it line by line in my car. I've been listening to it loud. I've been listening to it soft. It's an old hymn that is just getting into my soul to be still before God as I remember him. And I want to encourage you to do that. As this song plays, as the worship team sings, as you come forward and you take his body and his blood and you remember the Lord, I pray that this song would minister to you in the same way that it's ministered to me, to encourage you to not take your eye off the wall or to not take your eye off that great work. So the worship team's going to start and you guys can...